My story could have ended there, but even though I honestly did not need answers, I wanted them. If there was somebody researching this because it had been happening, what could they tell me about my condition? I would have been much wiser for simply choosing to remain uninformed, despite how ignorant I would have been to the nature of my condition. A condition. Right. How far have we come that the second we discover immortality, it gets relegated to a medical condition? It was that night when I made the decision to call the doctor. We had a very brief but hopeful chat, wherein I discussed the car accident as I recalled it. He seemed incredibly interested and wanted to meet with me the next day. He gave a brief explanation of his benefactors. They were a relatively rich group of men who wanted to unlock the secret of eternal youth and believed that it began with these cases of immortality. It was a promising lead, they thought, and they felt there was nobody better suited to the task than him. I felt a lump in my throat. Was it nerves? Cold feet? I didn't know. But I was gripped with a terrible feeling, and possessed with a compulsion to decline. Yet I caved to his incessance, despite lightly made attempts to backpedal from the situation. He booked a ticket to my town on the spot, and would be landing the next morning. When I met the doctor in person, he was a small, middle-aged man with round features and very few wrinkles. He dressed as you imagined a well-off gentleman might, with a bushy mustache and brown dress clothes. He was balding, rotund, generally unimpressive, and greeted me with a big smile. We had met in a coffee shop that sat beside the train tracks in the middle of town, and it was there that he revealed what had happened to him and how he had discovered his own condition. It was late night over a decade ago. He had been home with his significant other for a rare night of relaxation and bonding when their home was burgled. He and his wife were both seemingly executed. But he woke up in a body bag and suffocated twice before they went to ready him for transport and realized that he was moving. Before they saw that man who had been shot through the head, who had been declared dead on the scene, who was definitely deceased, have no apparent injury when examined further, aside from shock and being covered in their own blood. Cases like his, he said, were remarkably easy to sweep under the rug due to their sheer implausibility. Often, the physicians themselves were the ones to report it. They weren't actively trying to keep these cases secret, even if they did have some concerns regarding what their publicity could mean. And interestingly enough, the causes were somewhat localized. The sweeping majority of the cases reported came from the eastern part of the United States. All the cases came from the Appalachian region. There wasn't enough data to be more specific, but the doctor told me that he believed there was likely more cases that could have been reported. Miraculous cases, where people survived impossible accidents without a scratch, or cases where people completed suicide, only to find they weren't dying. Now that struck a chord. I coughed, shifted in place as I informed him that I might have known about this before my accident. I explained my history of suicide attempts and my two recent events. His eyes seemed to narrow when I started to talk very superficially about my odd dreams. I paused upon glimpsing his expression, realizing that perhaps I had gone a little bit into unbelievable territory. At my stall, he took a moment to affirm me and asked me to tell him about my dreams. I went into depth about them, explaining to him the vividness, the injuries they left me with, and how they healed, and the sheer horror they left in their wake. To this point, he had been taking notes. I didn't see the kind, nor do I know how detailed they were, but his pencil was moving at a furious pace while I described what I had glimpsed. Then he asked me a question that chilled my blood. During any of these dreams, at any point, did you feel like you touched something? See, I knew then what it was like to have frost in your veins. Yes, I replied. I described the first time after taking the pills. It was not so difficult to recall the indescribable feeling. Something happened to me, something that I had experienced as though I was under the influence of powerful drugs. I couldn't recall it in specifics, only that it had transpired. He seemed mildly frustrated by this, but I informed him that there was another time that I remember more clearly. I told him about my experience after I'd been hit by the car, the way the touch of that indefinable something made me feel. Like my very soul was being twisted up and wrung out. I could recall the sensation near perfection. But I was completely unable to describe it. Still, he seemed unsatisfied. He told me that he wanted to meet me at my house later that night, and that he'd bring some equipment to check the bloody rooms. I agreed. I did so reluctantly. But I did agree. The machines he brought to my house were not anything that I would have pegged as too unusual. They looked like medical equipment that you find in the depths of a hospital, though. Not giant machines, but things resembling life support equipment. At least, I think it was life support equipment. Maybe the weirdest thing about them was that they each seemed to be connected to some kind of jar. I watched him through the window as he unloaded them from his vehicle. It was a large box truck with a hydraulic lift. But as I was saying, it wasn't the machines that were unusual. It was the sheer number of them. By the time he finished unloading, there must have been at least a dozen. I think I started to get nervous when I saw what looked to be some kind of industrial-strength nail gun in his palm as he strode to the door. What did he intend on doing? We made eye contact through the window, and he quickly averted his gaze back to the door. No smile, no friendly greeting. And I didn't find it too weird because I thought this was just a business thing. He was focused, I believed, on whatever it is he intended to do. There came a knock upon my door. I opened it and was immediately hit by a taser. Before I could recover, he shoved a needle full of something into my neck. I stumbled up, running to the kitchen as I clutched the injection site when I felt another shock ripple across my body. And this time, while I convulsed on the floor, he bound my hands. He dragged me into my own living room and revealed the nail gun, roughly the size of his forearm. This one was made to drive nails into metal struts. He pushed it into my shoulder and fired, pinning me to the wall as I screamed, and the head of the nail vanished deep into my flesh, leaving a bloody pit behind while blood poured from the wound. I screamed in agony while he did it again to the other shoulder. I spent hours there. But in the early morning, where darkness reigned, after he had set his machines upon the rooms, I found it in me to struggle once again. I pulled against the wall, feeling an internal sensation that I had never felt before. Stifling grunts and sniffling as I yanked myself free, I hit the ground with a loud thud. I felt the nails tear from my skin and muscle, cracking through my bones. The surge of agony was cut short by the adrenaline that flooded through my veins as I heard running from the hallway that led from the living room to my room. He was coming. He was slow getting up, but perhaps not nearly as slow as I had imagined it to be. I was off the ground maybe a second after I heard him coming and bolted towards my front door. I tried lifting my arms before that point to no avail. My shoulders were too damaged. I couldn't raise my arms at all. I threw myself against the front door, trying to break through it. The doctor wasn't a very fit man at all. And when he rounded the corner, he failed to stop, sliding into my body first. Our combined masses shattered my front door and sent me spiraling off the porch into the yard. Freedom. Freedom. I could taste it in the grass and dirt that sprayed into my face as I ate shit, but it didn't stop me. I was halfway to the woods where I heard the decompression of air and felt a spike of pain hit me square in the spine. My legs froze. I toppled over. I couldn't crawl with my shoulders in that condition, so I wriggled in the ground, desperately trying to escape this horrible man. I didn't feel him grab my foot. I just felt pain in my back as it was lifted. He started to drag me back to the house. I could do nothing but scream my head off as he stole me away. When we returned to the house, he pulled me into one of the rooms that I had bled in, and there, again, he brandished the nail gun. He pressed it firmly against my stomach and fired. I felt one nail meet the other inside my guts. I heard the wet schluck as metal pushed gleefully through my flesh. I felt the hot blood come up my throat and pour over my face as I vomited. "I don't think you'll be able to run this time," he commented. "Really. Now I have to keep an eye on you as I do my work, even as I doubt you could escape this predicament." I felt warm tears well up in my eyes as the throbbing pain continued. "Please let me go," I begged him quietly. "Please, please let me go." "I will," he replied, in the calmest tone that I've heard him speak in, even counting our meeting at the coffee shop. I can't keep you prisoner forever, nor have I found a way to kill people like us. If I cut your tongue out to keep you from talking, you'd probably just grow it back. Same with any other injury I inflict, truth be told. I've had a while to test the limitations of this. Even foreign bodies will be pushed out eventually, so surgical implants aren't an option either. He continued to fiddle with one of those machines that he'd brought, set up in the corner of my old room. I don't do house calls very often. This is a special occasion, he remarked. I've tried to get in contact with the other people from cases I know about, and most of them skirted me. But the ones that didn't made leaps and bounds from their contributions. Through fearful eyes, I peered at him, silent, and with no obvious way he wouldn't heed my pleas. If he had done this before, he'd probably grown numb to cries for mercy. For those I haven't met, I've been able to get medical and psychological profiles for some of them. It wasn't incredibly easy to do, but I did manage. There was only one thing that they all shared. A history of suicide and, eventually, disturbing sleep patterns. The files I've read don't go into depth in those disturbed sleep patterns, but I have some theories. I watched him stand up from the thing that he fiddled with as more blood bubbled from my mouth, leaking into my eyes. They started to burn, and I shut them tightly, tears streaming down my face as I struggled to breathe. He walked over to one side of the room, and I heard the sound of metal utensils shifting amongst one another. Ah, there it is. Ah, this one. He then walked over to where I lay, kneeling down as he used a scalpel to cut my shirt free of the giant nail. He exposed my torso, and I felt him tap the scalpel against my chest. I'll need a sample, he explained, before we can start. Don't be fooled, though. Just because I'm tapping your chest, it might not be from there. I'm honestly debating on maybe taking an eye. It'd grow back anyway, you know. But I'm sincerely torn between the heart and the eye. I've been doing this a long time, you know. The dreams have shown me things, too. He ranted. I whimpered as he drew the scalpel across my chest in circular motions as he tapped it against my sternum. Different things than what you have seen. Death triggers those dreams, those visions. I've killed the others a lot before. I've made them tell me their dreams, and each time occasionally, they'd dream after they'd tried and succeeded in killing themselves. There's only one thing inconsistent with your story. You had the dream after the incident in the forest, even though your gun ultimately never fired. You pressed the scalpel into my skin, and I felt it sting as it very lightly cut my flesh. I must have counted somehow. He mused, and I felt him drag the scalpel up my chest, up my neck, and to my right eye. The eye will work as well as the heart, and a lot less of an affair, don't you think? I clenched my eyes shut even more tightly. Please, please, no. The answer I received was a blade shoved through my eyelid, behind my eye. I felt its sharp edge violate the integrity of my eye as the small organ spilled its contents into my socket, and I screamed. He withdrew the blade, and I could detect distaste in his voice. Now you've gone and done it. I've only got one more good, easy shot. If you won't cooperate, blood rolled down the side of my face, gushing into my ear as it started to ring like sirens. I watched from the other eye as he brandished the nail gun and clenched it shut again as I felt it press against my head. Just dream something for me, then. I need you to be still. He let the gun linger on my face. I opened my eye reluctantly. The look on his face was maddening. He was savoring my fear, and then there was darkness. I felt an incredible coldness. I tried to speak, but no noise came from my mouth. I couldn't see my body. I couldn't feel my own lips. Then gradually I became aware of a speck of blue light in the distance. I merely stared at it, apparently unaware that there was anything more I could do, but gradually my faculties returned. I started to walk towards the thing, striding over a vast stretch of nothingness. With each passing step, a profound sense of wrongness took root in my heart. I think it saw me. Whatever was behind that light was sentient. I can't say it was alive. I don't know that term living could apply to it. ever again, as we understand it, but it was active and sentient. It showed me something. It showed me a terrible truth. I discovered there and then that humanity was meant to die, that we were supposed to die. This heavy, dark thing that hides in the shadows behind that neon blue light stared into my soul, into my very being, and I felt unprecedented despair. It lies on the peripheral of existence. Something more potent and infinite than innumerable universes. It was dense. But that density was so superficial. Beneath all that weight was something empty, something contradictory to what it pretended to be, something that lived in the absence, in the places we aren't observing, hand outstretched to grab our mortality and try to claim our deaths as its own. It stays still as a statue. Its form indiscernible. But I could tell you that it sat upon a curtain of stars. And very, very occasionally I saw it blink. I saw its head fidget. And the stars that lay beneath it would flicker out of existence. We stared at each other for eons. I didn't breathe. I didn't think. This ancient force compelled me to a state of reverent silence. And then I heard it rasp something. It was so quiet, an utterance in a language that I didn't know, yet the force that invaded my skull propelled me awake. I woke up, the nail in my body exploded outward as I shrieked. I jumped to my feet and stumbled forward, slamming into the wall before beating my skull against it. I beat myself unconscious. I woke to laughter. Not a loud or riotous laughter, but something more nervous and quiet. I peeled myself away from the damaged, bloodied wall and turned around, slumping against the floor as my new eyes searched the darkness for the source of that noise. The doctor lay in the corner beside his machine. A nail pinned him to the wall, ironically by his shoulder. In his hand, he grasped a notebook of some kind. In the other, a pen. In his machine, hooked up with an electrode and some horribly grafted wires, was my eye. Stared back at me, lifeless, almost as lifeless as the eye of the man who laughed beside me. His laughter was devoid of life or joy, as though he had been drained of all vigor. His head lulled towards me, and he motioned to the machine vaguely. Your eye helped me see. It made the machine see. He pet the device. The unimpressive, innocuous, generic machine, and stared at me. It doesn't matter what you do, the doctor told me. Not what any of us do. The future of our world is the state of where I was shown. I bolted down the street, fleeing my own home as the doctor shouted after me. They drew its attention for a moment, and now all it had to do was touch the universe. He raised his free arm and grabbed at me. It lives inside all empty things. I pulled my arm free from his icy grip, jerking away with a start as I panicked. He continued to chuckle away. I think it must truly be something terrible. Even death won't challenge its claims. I tried to back out of the room, dizzy and disoriented, tripping as I bumped against the door frame and falling against a row of those damn machines. It was like I realized that they were connected together through cords and that the connection to each machine was a glass jar with a body part in it, some mostly eyes and hearts, though there was some other things that I could not identify, and in one instance, a whole brain. I turned in both horror and growing rage towards the downed doctor, getting to my feet and seething. You're a fucking monster, I blurted into tears as I choked out the words. A fucking monster! He let his head roll to the side again. No, he replied quietly. I'm just a doctor. A deranged grin spread from ear to ear on the man's face. We stared at each other for a moment. A moment longer. Before he broke the silence. Your new eyes are so, so beautiful. I flew into a rage.
I rushed the pin man and proceeded to put the paws on him. I let fists and fingers pound and tear. I savaged him as an animal might. The whole entire time he laughed. I felt as if he was mocking me. It wasn't until my foot stepped on his journal that he stopped laughing. He seemed to rouse himself somewhat, aggressively shoving at me with his working arm. "Off it, bastard, off!" I kicked him in his goddamn teeth, and while he was disoriented, I reached down and stole his book away. He stared at the book in disbelief, then cast a frightened glance at me. "You shouldn't read it. You shouldn't read it, not with those eyes." I stepped back, brandishing my prize. As the beaten doctor looked at him in a mix of anguish and curiosity, I asked him, "Why not?" His face was stern. "There are answers in there." I swallowed. Not spit, not snot from drying tears. I swallowed a heavy sense of fear. "Answers?" He simply nodded. I looked at the bound book, placed my hand atop it. Dare I open it? My fingers grazed lightly against the cover, eyes flirting with both it and the doctor. I didn't know what he meant by that. I didn't know that I wanted to know. "I'm taking this," I informed him. "I'm going to burn it." I could have learned so much from the notes that he had taken on the people he had tortured. But that was why I refused. I didn't want that knowledge. I didn't want to know what was in the book. But am I telling him this? He started to laugh. "Good luck," he hissed. He peered at me from a broken grin. In his gaze, I felt an unprecedented festering malice. Even if I wasn't in the best state to answer all the police's questions, why I was covered in blood being one of them. I told the authorities about the doctor in my house, about the things that he wanted to do, about his industrial nail gun and machines full of body parts. They naturally didn't believe me. I had no injuries to back up my claims, but I was suspicious enough, again, covered in blood, that they ended up detaining me and sending somebody to my house anyway to check. There they found more than they bargained for. They found the doctor in a comatose state, still nailed to a wall. His contingency of machines with body parts connected them. They were on full display. They did eventually do a genetics test to try and confirm whose body parts they belonged to, and as far as I know, they only matched my eye to the blood on the doctor's jacket. On his hands, on his face. Obviously, the blood was mine too. Nails were found scattered around the house with my blood upon them, and still they refused to even entertain what I was telling them could possibly, partially, be true. The doctor, for his part, was not dead. But sometime after I left, he entered a deep state of trance, unable to be shaken out of it by even the most vigorous and powerful men available. No stimulants could rouse him either. Nobody could explain his condition, just as nobody could explain why I survived with a giant spike in my head. I doubt they just dropped the investigation, but for the time, they let me go. But go where? To my house, where I had just been murdered? Where I died twice even before then? Where guns didn't work if you tried to use them on yourself? He was perfectly able to use his nail gun on me. I couldn't trust my ex-roommates. They'd rejected me flatly. I didn't have any family around. Ultimately, as uneasy as I felt there, I returned home. And now, as I'm here, sharing this story with you, this incredible, terrible story, I'm somehow, someway unable to die. I tried to burn the doctor's book, and it didn't work. I doused it in gasoline, threw it in a fire pit, and at the end of everything, it wasn't even singed. I tried throwing it in water. I tried to rip the pages out, and they wouldn't even tear. I tried so hard, and I failed, and even as I say this, It sits next to my computer, taunting me with terrible truths I'm afraid to examine. I don't know what to do anymore. I moved out of that small town and moved away from that tortured home. After that incident, rumors swirled around me and made living there unbearable. I wanted to try to kill myself yet again, but I refrained. I worried about what I would see next. I wondered if next time that dark thing might be closer, might be hungrier, might be angrier. So I've sat, and I tried to work meddling jobs to make my existence feel full. But I still feel empty inside. I still want to die. I'm just not allowed to. And I think after posting this, I'll open the book.